And it also would put the value for that district at the current market value, given the various projects that have been started for tearing down the Blackie's restaurant, and it has a value which, you know, would be reflected for the proposed legislation. So that's the introduction, and I also want to thank my co-authors, Senators Bach and Senator Ortman. And I have two witnesses, Craig Waldron, the city manager of Oakdale, and Bob Streeter, the community development director.
Great. Thank you so much, Senator Wieger. Mr. Waldron.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, the senator stated it quite well. We're very appreciative of the past special legislation that we had that focused on two critical areas, our blighted mall and then the Tanner's Lake site, which was blighted across from 3M. We had all kinds of police problems. And what subsequently happened based on that legislation, we were able to move forward with the mall. And as the senator pointed out, that's been extremely successful. That blight is gone. We're ready to go in there and start the infrastructure as soon as we're done with the snow. The Tanner's Lake is taking some more work. We were able to get it halfway done based on the fact that we got to the blight. It's gone. It's eliminated. We've eliminated the police calls. You certainly don't want a mess like that across from 3M. So that was successfully accomplished. We did have the toll development group ready to move forward with a major apartment restaurant type of scenario there. The market just ended up to be so difficult with this economy that they weren't able to move forward with that. That's where we're asking you to extend that window that gives us a few more years to get that development agreement in place and subsequently get the district certified. We do have a potential developer now that we're working with that's virtually ready to move forward with the site, very similar to what Told had presented. So if it hadn't been for the economy, we wouldn't be here asking you to extend this, but we're more than halfway there, and the blight is gone. Thank you.
Madam Chair, finally, I'd like to introduce Bob Streeter, the director of community development, to provide a little more on the specifics of the proposal before you.
Thank you. Mr. Streeter.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not going to repeat what Senator Wieger said, Mr. Waldron, but I'm just happy to answer questions.
Members, are there questions? I do have a question, Senator Wieger. Does the city of Oakdale have a resolution of support for this proposal?
Yes, Madam Chair, the city as well as the school district and the county have passed resolutions, and I don't know if staff has those copies. If not, we will have them brought to the table.
I would appreciate that if you can provide that to the committee.
Thank
and then
you.
I had a question
right.
for council. Yes. I was wondering if this committee and the state has exempted other cities from these blight test rules.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's my understanding that in the past, this committee has, in fact, exempted certain parcels from the blight test, which requires that 70% of the parcels in a particular area be occupied by buildings and 50% of those buildings be substandard. In times in the past, certain parcels that may not qualify, they don't meet the particular percentage coverage or substandards, haven't been blighted, or excuse me, been exempted. There are times where this type of district is created, there may not be a particular avenue. So,
certainly. So my understanding that this has been exempt in the past when there are certain districts that haven't qualified or met the 70 or 50% mark.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Sylvia.
Other comments? Chair, yes, sir. Mr. Streeter.
Yes, Mr. Streeter.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, these buildings have met the blight test. They were found to be substandard. What we're talking about here is the time between when they're demolished and when a TIF district is certified, and that's typically 3 years. And so we're asking for that time limit to be extended. We're not asking for assistance to remove buildings that aren't substandard. These are substandard buildings.
All right. Thank you very much. Other questions or comments from members? All right. Without objection, I'd like to lay over Senate File 1619 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Wieger. Senator Gerlach. Welcome to the committee. I hope the snow wasn't too bad.
Too bad, not yet.
Yeah, it was getting there on the way up from Chanhassen.
Okay.
Senator Gerlach, welcome to the committee, and whenever you're ready.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair and members. Today I'm here, of course, with one of my cities that I represent, the city of Apple Valley, also my home city. And every member should have with them a packet that looks like this, which very succinctly describes the projects, and we'll have some people walk through some of the maps and explain what's what here. But very simply, this bill, Senate File 1676, addresses a need for an extension on a timeline. There are numerous economic development projects going on in the city of Apple Valley. This bill here addresses two of those. And you'll see in the handout, it very succinctly says Project 1 and Project 2. Project 1 is near the Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit Corridor and talks about one of the projects here, and I'm going to have the mayor and also some other individuals talk about those. And then Project 2, you'll see, has to do with some road infrastructure and some other things. These projects have been in the works for some time, actually, since April of last year. And the simple fact is that in these economic times and with the complexity of some of these projects bringing all the different parties together, it just simply requires some more time. So this bill here is just about some very simple extensions to those. So with me, I'm going to introduce the mayor of the city of Apple Valley, Mary Heyman Rowland.
Madam Mayor, we've met here in this committee many times over several years, and it's always nice to have you here.
Thank you so much. We're welcome. Always making us feel so welcome, Senator Ortman. I am Mary Heyman Rowland, and do I need to spell it or not?
No, nope, you
okay,
do not.
Okay, you've got that already. I appreciate you giving us this time to speak to Senate File 1676, and as Senator Gerlach has shared, we are doing a lot of economic development in Apple Valley, and I very much appreciate you giving us this time to do even more. It is rare that Apple Valley comes before you to ask for special legislation. We're very judicious and we're thoughtful about our use of public resources. In fact, today Apple Valley enjoys a AAA bond rating and Money Magazine ranked as top 20 city in America. And over the past 2 years, the legislators have focused on job creation, which we very much applaud the efforts in helping cities to be able to create jobs, especially in this economic climate through tax increment financing. So why are we here? As presented in your handout, we have a problem that requires your assistance. We have been working since last April, as the senator has told you, in the use of the tools that were provided by our legislator to create jobs, not just a few jobs, but a significant number of jobs, lots of jobs. And I can't tell you all the details of this right now because it is proprietary, but in March, in the next month, you will know. So we're near the finish line. We have two projects, but we're running out of time. Current law requires that the construction begin at the end of June of 2012, which is only 4 months away. These two projects hold a promise of 800 new jobs that will be realized over the next 2 years. And we're asking for your support in Senate File 1676 to extend the ability to use the provision of the present legislation one more year to finish our work on these two projects. Your assistance will enable us to attract a major employer to the existing 66,000-square-foot office building located in downtown Apple Valley. This 25-year-old building is tired. It needs considerable renovation and to make it ready for this new company. And this project is not speculative. This company is committed to moving to Minnesota from another state. And we need these tools in place to finish the deal. The second project is also close to the finish line and also is dependent on the tax increment financing assistance. We are working closely with an industrial developer to put together an office and light manufacturing development totaling over 200,000 square feet. This project is dependent on the installation of a new roadway and the lowering of multiple petroleum pipelines. This pre-development work has proven complex and time-consuming and has delayed the developer's ability to break ground on the new building. In summary, we need time. Just as the other applicants have said, we need time to make these projects a reality. Senate File 1676 provides that time needed, and we understand the need to create more jobs for our state. We're focused on doing so, and by working together, we can accomplish great things. Mr. Nordquist, who is our Community Development Director, is also with me today and will help us to answer any specific questions that you may have. And thank you so much for giving us the time.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Nordquist?
Yes.
Did you want to speak on behalf of 1676?
Madam Chair, committee members, no presentation. The mayor did a wonderful job. I'm just here to answer any questions as they may occur.
Thank you, and I think we should just take up 1676 because the purposes of these bills are different, and I think in that context, maybe we can have discussion if members have questions about Senate File 1676. Or are there others here to testify about Senate File 1676? Forgive me for not asking before, but if there are folks here that want to testify about Senator Wigger's bill 1619, if you let us know, we'll make sure we accommodate you as well. So seeing no others, no questions or comments from the members, the chair would like to lay over file 1676 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Senator Gerlach, did you want to discuss 1677?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is the second bill and final bill that I have before you today. And again, you also have a handout. And we actually have some pictures to show you a little bit about what it is we're trying to accomplish. You know, there's limited gravel mining resources in the metro area for our road construction, and the resources we have, we certainly like to use them to the full extent. And we have had mining operations continue, you know, move south, and then we've pulled together some development on those sites as the mining operation has moved out. There's a 500-acre undeveloped land in Apple Valley, sand and gravel mining. It's currently underway. And this bill is about a mining and reclamation project. With that, I am going to, again, I'm going to turn it over. We have some additional testifiers. This is a little more of a meaty request as far as some of the complexity to it and what's being done. And so we're going to have some additional testifiers provide information and answer questions committee members may have. So with that, I will turn it over to Mayor Heyman Rowland to outline the specifics of the project.
Mayor, you're on a roll.
Thank you so much. I very much appreciate you allowing us again to take the opportunity to present this bill. So why are we here? We have a unique problem and a unique opportunity to present to you today. This photograph shows an active sand and gravel mining operation which exists in Apple Valley today. The size is significant. It encompasses 500 acres and is essentially a huge hole in the ground. As you may know, existing tax increment law has a category related to redevelopment. Unfortunately, and somewhat surprisingly, this hole in the ground does not qualify for redevelopment tax increment assistance under the current law. Senate File 1677 provides the assistance we need to turn the property into an economic asset for the city and our region. The bill assists in addressing with the local initiative's TIF financing an estimated $50 million in front-end costs related to major road improvements, utility installation, stormwater management, and structured parking solutions in the highest intensity area of this project. The bill allows us to qualify the parcels to meet the market when it's ready for redevelopment. The site plan that has been developed for this site will add 7,000 to 10,000 jobs. And further, when fully developed, the project will generate more than $750 million in economic impact, something that our state greatly could benefit from. The property owner is Pete Fisher and Liza Fisher Robson. They're a brother and sister, and I am very pleased they are here with us today. And Liza will speak to us this morning about the history of the land and the unique partnership that we have with the Fishers. Liza.
Ms. Robson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Liza Fisher Robson. My brother Peter Fisher and I own the property in question. Our family has owned this property in one form or another since the 1920s. The Fisher family has a history of long-standing partnership with the city of Apple Valley. In the 1990s, we reclaimed our original gravel mine and redeveloped 500 acres into both housing and retail. So that was our original gravel mine.
Ms. Robson, I'm sorry to interrupt, but can you point out where the development is on the 2009?
On the 2009
photo.
I'm gonna see it myself. Okay, so this is the current gravel mine that we're talking about for the
time. Right.
This is the redevelopment that we did in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Silent on that.
So that was the original gravel mine in 1995, and this is what it developed into.
Madam Chair, if I could, there might be a little confusion. What they're showing is that a previous development project that was used that you're seeing right now. The previous, this is not the specific project we're talking about here, but just to give you an idea, this was a mining operation owned by the Fishers, and then in the mid-1990s, through a lot of partnerships with the city and a lot of developers, was able to turn it into what you see on the left there, which is a wide-ranging use of, there's housing, there's retail, there's all sorts of different businesses located there, and that's the type of thing that we're trying to accomplish now a little bit to the south as the mining operations have moved south. I just want to make sure there was no confusion about that. And then the other chart you're seeing is the current, again, now the current mining operation that we're looking to again transform into what was done 15 years ago.
So, Senator, the development that was done is an adjacent parcel to what you would be working on now.
It's very close to it. It's just across. It actually might even be adjacent because it's just north of County Road 42. So
it's kitty corner kind of.
Ms. Robson.
Chair Ortman, may I also include something?
Yeah.
I just want to be very specific about this, that the previous redevelopment was for retail. This development that will occur will be for a mixed business campus with the intention of head of household jobs.
All right, and another question. The previous development, was that done using TIF or not using TIF? Mayor?
Madam Chair, it was. We used TIF on this project, but we did not need special legislation. It was qualified.
Right, and so we had some overall policies that authorized TIF, which we don't currently have.
Exactly.
And so did that TIF district expire?
Yes.
It will expire next
Robson,
year.
Let me just, for the record here, we have to keep that very clear. So,
Madam
Mayor,
Chair,
do you want to answer that question?
Madam Chair, yes. It will expire this next year.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Robson, I'm sorry to have interrupted, but I think they were important questions for members of the committee.
Absolutely. The tax increment financing that we used in the past was used to install the infrastructure in Fisher Marketplace because as landowners, the cost to privately finance the infrastructure was cost prohibitive. We are facing the same obstacle again today, and we are requesting help from the City of Apple Valley as well as the legislature. As business owners of Apple Valley, we are invested in the community and care about the future of our city and its vibrancy. We will work with the City of Apple Valley in cooperative partnership to make this new business campus model work. Tax increment financing will allow this property to develop in a timely and efficient manner, creating jobs, businesses, and a substantial tax base for our community.
Thank you, Ms. Robson. Mr. Duffy?
Yes.
Or Mr. Casserly?
Mr. Duffy.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Liza took part of what I was going to say.
I'm sorry. Would you state your name for the record,
sir? Sure. Gerald Duffy.
Thank you.
And I've been the attorney for the Fisher interests for many years. And I want to address what we did in the 90s, because back then, we were authorized to use TIF for mining redevelopment. And what we created is really quite substantial. Fisher Marketplace is one of the most successful retail operations in the metro. We created a bunch of homes that with a park and water features. And we did this in partnership with the city of Apple Valley. And we think we can do it again if we have the TIF authorization. Except this time, as the mayor has indicated, we're going to look for head of household jobs in a large office park, which will require structured parking, which is very expensive. And as most of you know, in the suburbs, they don't charge for the structured parking, so it has to be subsidized. So that's what we're asking for permission to do.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Mr. Casserly, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Jim Casserly. I'm Mr. Duffy's partner. I've been involved, I'm an attorney, I've been involved in public finance and tax increment for all 30 years. So I'm pleased to be here and try to assist. What I was going to do was just quickly run through the legislation, mm-hmm. so that members would have a little better understanding of what we're trying to accomplish.
Thank you.
If you have the legislation in front of you, Section 1A simply describes the project area, and we're referring to this as a mining reclamation project area because, not so strangely, that's what it is. Sub B provides that the parcels that are described in A can be included or are eligible for inclusion in a redevelopment tax increment financing district. C is an exception to the pooling limitation. Under current law, you have to spend tax increment revenues generally within the tax increment district in which they originate. Because of the issues involving the development on the mechanics for developing this area are going to be starting at the fringe of the area and then moving in. And so at the inception of the project, there will be increment generated that will help with the costs that we will be incurring to develop the most difficult portion, and that is the center of the area. So that is the reason for needing the pooling the exception to the pooling limitation. The D is an exception to the five-year rule. That simply is a requirement that expenditures must be made within 5 years from the certification of the tax increment district. Because this is the complexities involved with this project, and because of the vagaries of the business cycle, we are asking for an exemption to this. And the E is simply that this legislation, which is permissive, would sunset in 10 years. So that is the explanation of the bill itself. And as people have mentioned, 25 years ago, we would not have been here asking for this because we would have been able to do it under law in effect at that time. And if we were trying to do this 20 years ago, we would have only needed the exception to the pooling limitation and the five-year rule. And if we had tried to do it 15 years ago, we probably would have had to come in and seek special legislation. So,
Mr. Casserly, I appreciate your going through the bill with us. It helps quite a bit. I'm wondering, certainly to your testimony, things change around here quite a bit. And time does change our views. And I asked Council Mr. Sylvia, we haven't authorized a new TIF district since 2008. Is that correct?
I believe so.
So we've done extensions since 2008, and we actually did quite a few of them last year. That's not an impediment, I don't believe, to your project. I think your project is a very good one, but I think that we have to look at it in terms of the overall policy. And I would ask if any of you know, perhaps Senator Bach knows, if there are other parcels similarly situated across the state where there could be some great prospect for a mining reclamation project. Is that something maybe the legislature should look at and authorize more than just one, but maybe look at an overall policy to authorize other projects that might have the same possibilities, Senator Bach?
We do, in the TAC and I believe for require that we tax the companies and require them to spend a certain, so many cents per ton on reclamation. But we actually impose a tax on the companies and say some of it has to be directed towards reclamation. And it's a very successful program. The companies are very supportive of it.
Well, and what I'm getting at is maybe doing something a little bit broader, because there is a good question about why are we authorizing TIF districts again. Well, maybe we're authorizing a certain kind because it makes so much sense to do it. If there are other parcels like this that are challenged by the very nature of the usage of the land, maybe we want to encourage that all across the state and not just in the city of Apple Valley.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just yesterday afternoon I was out in the city of Savage. Gerald Duffy. I was out in the city of Savage. There's a 460-acre gravel operation on the south end of Savage, that probably is going to require a similar sort of assistance. And when these operations finish, they're going to move down into Empire. The gravel community did an environmental impact study for Empire Township, that's where the gravel is going to expand to. So at some point in time, there's about 2,500 acres in Empire that will be mined, and at some point in time, that property is going to have to be developed also.
I think it's a good question for the committee. Mr. Casserly?
Madam Chair, kind of on that, there's a pretty good vehicle in place. There is an aggregate tax in law that counties can impose. And it currently, I believe all the money's dedicated for roads and bridges. Mm-hmm. It would be pretty easy to create an additional use for that aggregate tax to create a pot of money that then could be available to do reclamation. It does seem to me that using TIF to do this and requiring all the other property taxpayers in the community to pay for the redevelopment seems like an unfair burden on them. It seems like that redevelopment cost should be built into the cost of extraction and passed on to the people that are benefiting by the extraction. And it would be relatively easy to do, I think, with a current tax in place for that counties have at their disposal.
Senator Bach, I think we should be working to help this community do this. They clearly have community support. And so I don't think that's a problem here. But maybe that's a way to do it. And so I think we should be looking at this. I want to support the effort here, but I think we need to see it in the larger context. I do have a couple of other questions. The requirement that the revenues be used in the redevelopment. You said that you're redeveloping the fringe areas first, and you wanted an exemption for that requirement. Is it possible to do that maybe for the first 5 years, but not for the second 5 years? If you've got a 10-year plan, that within 5 years you'll be able to redirect all of the revenues back into the actual redevelopment of the TIF district area and boundaries?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Casserly.
Oftentimes, the problem with development is that you can make a much larger tax increment district so that you could try to incorporate the area where you have the heaviest expenditures and geographically align that where you have the greatest revenues. A lot of times, they don't line up in these projects, and that's the reason for creating the pooling exception. That exception is asked for numerous times. I've drafted it myself for a half a dozen cities, and the legislature has approved that. And it always is because the development doesn't work very neatly. The most difficult part to develop in this area is going to be the center of the site. And if we don't do any kind of assistance at all, we will, in fact, have some development. It's not that the land's going to sit vacant, but it's only going to develop essentially on its fringes with a limited amount of development. And that is what we're trying to use to assist us with the really hardcore center of this project. It's about 250, 300 acres that is the most difficult part to redevelop.
Madam Chair, may I please? Thank you. This legislation would enable us to do a TIF, multiple TIF districts in phases. And so I think that that's important to understand, because we can exercise specific areas or not. So I think that that's really important for you to understand. We're not going to do a large, giant TIF district. It will be phased, as you said, Madam Chair, appropriately. We will use those TIF districts as needed. This is enabling legislation, so thank you for that question.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Questions or comments from members? Senator Gerlach, and to the attorneys, Mr. Duffy and Mr. Casserly, I'm going to move that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion. But I would ask if you would please consider drafting an amendment that would be more encompassing for other similarly situated properties, so that we then have a policy of supporting this type of development. And then that's an answer to why are we authorizing new TIF districts. It's because there are properties just like this that are challenged all over Minnesota, and we want to encourage the redevelopment. And so I would ask you to please prepare that, Senator Gerlach, and we'll give you the heads up when it looks like we're going to package up this omnibus bill, but I would ask you for your help in doing that.
Madam Chair, we certainly will work on that.
Yep.
I appreciate that, Senator Gerlach. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify about this proposal? Seeing none, without objection, the Chair lays over Senate File 1677 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, members.
And what was the name of the outlet? It was the Fisher Market?
Mark.
I'm going to have to go find it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Cruz, is he here?
Yes, he was.
Senator Cruz, Senate File 2016. We've got housing TIF modifications for Brooklyn Park. Senator Cruz, is this your first time in the Tax Committee? Second time. We can be harder on you now. Okay, members.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Yes, this is my second time before the committee. The first time was with our tuition tax credit that we were working on together. So another good piece of legislation. Members, thank you so much for having me here this morning for this very, very important bill. Just to tell you a little bit about the reason for this legislation, as we know, the housing market over the last few years has struggled. We have seen a large spike in foreclosures, particularly in my area. To give you an example, in the city of Brooklyn Park, about 20% of our housing stock over the past few years has been through the foreclosure process. So really, really big issue for you. The reason that we come before you today is to ask for some conformity, some clarity concerning the TIF foreclosure recovery language that was originally passed last year. I know that we're kind of on a time crunch here, and I want to be respectful of that, so I will just briefly hit some of the high points and then offer to take any questions and any other comments from our Brooklyn Park folks here. The first thing this legislation does is address the six-month rule. The existing law requiring that homes have been vacant for 6 months, the redemption period has expired, creates a number of concerns for our foreclosure recovery program in Brooklyn Park. Essentially, the way the legislation is written right now is a home can go all the way through the foreclosure process, and then there's an additional 6 months that's required after that. We kind of see that as unnecessary. The second piece to that is, and this is perhaps even more important, the six-month rule works against our streamlining process of acquiring foreclosed homes through the National Community Stabilization Trust, NCST, First Look Program, which is administered locally by the Twin Cities Community Land Bank, TCCLB. They provide the First Look Program. This First Look at foreclosure homes from all of the major banks before the homes go onto the open market. Because the First Look program has become so efficient at getting these homes on the market, what we've seen happen is they can actually have the problem addressed already, and because of this six-month waiting period, there's a gap where nothing can be done with the property, and it just kind of sits there. So that's what we're looking to address in that piece. The second big point of the legislation addresses the market value cap. The current law places a $200,000 cap on the market value of the housing, but the statute is not perfectly clear about whether this refers to existing housing or housing after it has been rehabbed or reconstructed. We believe that the cap should be based on an assessor's estimate of the post-construction value. Without this change, it is risky for us to undertake projects because if we improve the value of the home more than we anticipate, or if the market changes during the rehabilitation process and climbs over $200,000, the city is no longer able to use the pooled TIF dollars as was intended by the original 2011 legislation. This is particularly important to Brooklyn Park, as we have a lot of housing stock that fits right on that $200,000 line. So that we would like to see that addressed. The third point, this addresses eligible expenses. The current law does not include rehabilitation as an eligible expenditure. Our approach to foreclosure property management has three prongs to it. The first is foreclosure prevention. The second is preservation and maintenance of the foreclosed homes. And the third is recovery and rehabilitation. And what this legislation would do is add rehabilitation to the list of items already in statute, which we believe kind of speaks to the original intent of the legislation. The fourth piece is the foreclosure reference that's in section reference to section 325N.1, subdivision 7. We're looking for just, again, technical clarification here. As a resident cannot really be in foreclosure and also have the redemption period expired at the same time. Once a home has gone through that redemption period, it has been foreclosed on. That process is essentially over. So the two can't work. What we're suggesting is that chapters 580, 581, and 582 offer the most comprehensive statutory language for defining residents in foreclosure. Again, we believe this speaks to original intent, which was to ensure that houses eligible for this financing source have both been through foreclosure and the applicable redemption period has expired. So I want to make it perfectly clear that we are in no way trying to shorten that redemption period. We're only speaking about, again, that six-month period earlier. The fifth piece is just, again, technical changes to some of the numbering. There's some ambiguities to whether foreclosure language added in the 2011 legislation got inadvertently tangled with tax credit rental housing provisions that were in existing statute. So this proposed language makes it clear that these are two independent uses of the TIF funds. And then the last piece that this legislation addresses is specifically the housing districts and some of the rules that are concerned there. An exemption from the housing district rules is needed if the pooled money is used to finance rehab of foreclosed homes that are not sold to income-qualified buyers. Essentially, what we believe here is that $200,000 cap speaks very well to the affordability of the properties and kind of sets that bar there already. So this legislation would ask for a little bit of flexibility in that. So with that, I would like to turn this over to some of my other Brooklyn Parks folks here. Jason Arnswold, who's the Director of Community Development. Kim Bergeron, who's the Development Project Manager. Steve Buebel, who is an attorney with Kennedy and Graven and was instrumental in kind of the drafting of this legislation. And then Robert Ingstrom, who is a private developer who we partner with for foreclosure mitigation.
Senator Cruz, If I could interrupt your train of thought in your presentation, please forgive me for doing it, but I'm wondering, have you had a chance to talk to Senator Limmer about this bill?
I have not had a chance to speak to Senator Limmer about this bill, Madam Chair, but I would be more than happy to do that.
The reason I asked, and we've asked to see if he's available, is he is very much involved in real estate. We've had a lot of foreclosure bills in front of the tax or the Judiciary Committee over the last few years, and it sounds like you're getting into an area that might have an impact on the foreclosure process, although I'm no expert on that. And so I've asked counsel if this is an item with the bill as currently drafted, if it needs to go to the Judiciary Committee, and it might. So we've asked to see if Senator Limmer is available to come down and review the bill with us. He may have some suggestions for you about how to make sure we avoid that if possible. Mm-hmm. And so I think it might be in your best interest to lay this bill on the table. You'll be welcome to speak, Ms. Nauman, if you want, but I think it's probably in your best interest to lay it on the table until we can include Senator Limmer in the conversation, see if he wants it in the Judiciary Committee, if we can carve it out and where he's at with this bill. I defer to his experience in this area so much. Senator Howe, did you want to speak to that?
Madam Chair, I did want to speak a little bit to the removal of the 6 months or more vacant. And one of the reasons I'm concerned about that is we have to give and I'm not sure how this change in this legislation, the way it's drafted here, affects us, but I would say that we should give the private market a chance to work, too. And, you know, I know you speak to the streamline here, but we don't want to have properties not have an opportunity for just private parties to come in. And I know in communities where the HRA is very aggressive that there's times where a private party wants to actually purchase a property, and that property doesn't even land on the market for 30 days. It's already been sold to the city for redevelopment, and they go in and fix it up and resell it. And then the resale price is higher than what the person who originally wanted to buy it could be at. So we need to make sure that we don't take out that private market availability. And so that's why I'm concerned about that 6 months.
And Senator Cruz. Madam Chair, I would be more than happy to address both of those concerns. I'll take yours first. If it be the will of the committee, we can go ahead and lay that on the table. I'm more than happy to talk to Senator Limmer about this. As you may know, I have been in real estate for about 7 years, and I've looked at this legislation and very, very familiar with the foreclosure process. That was a large part of my real estate business, especially with the current market condition. And knowing this legislation, that in no way conflicts with what is already there in the foreclosure. It doesn't change any of the current foreclosure law. What it does is essentially address that that six-month period after the six-month redemption period has already expired. And then secondly, Senator Howe, to your question, I agree with you 100%. I think we do need to make sure that private investors have every opportunity to get into this market. One of the things that I would mention as a response to that, though, is I'm sure you'll find a lot of what we've done as a city in Brooklyn Park has been pairing with those private developers and private investors. So that is, even though the cities are involved in this, I don't know, and I can only speak to Brooklyn Park. I don't know what other communities would do, but I know that I don't know that we're in the real estate business. I think we're right now the focus of asking for these legislative changes is to make sure that we can address an issue that's affecting over 20% of our housing stock. We have a lot of foreclosed homes, and we need to make sure that in order to maintain that market value in our area, we need to make sure that these homes are sold as quickly as possible. And that we can maintain that value there.
Senator Cruz, again, I'm going to recommend to you that by laying this bill on the table, I'm not asking you to do anything except lay it aside for 10 minutes or so, give Senator Limmer an opportunity to look at it. There are others that have questions about this. We could hear from Senator Metzen, and you might be able to address Senator Howe's concerns, Senator Marty's concerns, and Senator Limmer's. And then we can bring it back up whenever you're ready. This morning yet. So,
Madam Chair?
Senator Marty.
I'm sorry, I have to leave in a minute, but I just wanted to raise a question. I support what this bill is trying to do, but on page 2, line 26, when you were talking about the value of the home, I can see that you don't want to have somebody city coming in, fixing up a home, and oops, it's worth $210,000, so we better knock some logs out or something. I understand what you're trying to do. I'm not sure how this solution in here helps. It seems to me that it might be better doing about what the value of the house is prior to the construction work rather than, say, upon, because it sounds like what you're trying to do is immediately upon completion of the construction do an assessment, because then you're less likely to hit the $200,000 cap. But once the city's gone into the work of fixing up the place, it seems to me that maybe a lower value is appropriate then, but if you start before it's rehabbed, because I don't see how this helps your solution. Maybe I'm missing something.
Madam Chair, Senators, I think that... Well,
if you could state your name for the record,
yes,
sir.
Jason Arswell. I'm the Director of Community Development for Brooklyn Park. What the intention here was to try and make as little, as minor of fixes as possible, and I think what we had tried to do was maintain what we thought was the intent of the legislation by adhering to that $200,000 post rehabilitation value. This solution would at least provide some certainty on the front end so that we didn't have that oops sort of a scenario if we did do better than we thought, and our goal is to recover these neighborhoods and see prices increase as high as they can. So that's why this was proposed. Your solution would also work for our purposes.
Thank you. Mr. Arswold, again, I recommend, Senator Cruz, are you all right with that? Then the chair will move to lay on the table Senate file 2016. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate file 2016 is on the table, and hopefully Senator Cruz can confer with Senator Limmer, the two realtors, and maybe touch base with Senator Howe and see if you can come back to the committee, because you'll be very welcome later on in our agenda. And
you,
in the meantime, we'll hear from Senator Metzen. And he has a Dakota County TIF district.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Senator.
Good to be here.
You can do that too.
Thank you again for allowing us to come before you. This is a West St. Paul TIF issue. It's Senate File 2040. I have with me today, to my right, is the mayor of West St. Paul, Mr. Zan Miller, and to my left is Andrew Brennan from the Community Development Agency of Dakota County. What we're asking for today is an extension of our TIF district in West St. Paul. We've got some buildings along the corridor at the entryway to West St. Paul that are, some were built in 1895, 1910, and so forth and so on. And we just need this to for site acquisition, commercial development, and other issues in the area. We did something like this, similar to this last year for South St. Paul. And again, it just, it's the entryway to West St. Paul at the north end, contiguous with St. Paul. There's about 16,000 vehicles that go through this intersection, and again, it in dire need of rehab. So with that, I think I'll let the mayor say a few words, and I don't think this is as complicated as probably the ones you've been listening to, so we need the extension and need your support. Maybe you could get a few words from the mayor and
Senator Metzen, can you clarify, is this an extension of an existing TIF district? Thank you.
Yeah, it's been with the economy, Mayor, or Madam Chair and members, it's been pretty rough through the last 5-6 years, so we are asking for a little extension, and because this is going to be a real nice development once we get there. We've got a couple of county buildings in there now. Some structures have been taken down, but and it only generates about $200,000 a year, so we need to catch up to capture the next few years to do these projects I just talked about. So,
thank you. Mayor Zan Miller.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Thank you for having me here today. I appreciate the opportunity to come in and speak with you all. And as I was listening to previous groups testify, and the word real estate came up. And I thought to myself, how does that relate to this bill? Well, I'll tell you right now. Talk to any realtor. He says first impressions are the most important. If they don't like the front door, they're not going to come look inside. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want this part of Robert Street to be the front door. so that you know that something special is happening when you come into West St. Paul. A commercial corridor that generates $17 million at my last check in sales tax revenue that comes up to the state of Minnesota. That's a significant chunk of money, and we're glad to put the work into it to make it happen. We believe that it is in our best interest to make this part of Robert Street as good or better than the rest of Robert Street. We also believe that it has not been due to a lack of effort. Dealing with each one of these property owners is extremely difficult in terms of acquiring and clearing the properties. We've been aggressive in assisting the county. We've passed resolutions supporting their renewal of the project, and we want to make it a reality. This can be truly something that says, welcome to Dakota County. We're open for residents, we're open for business, and we're open for tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Madam Chair, we're going to have an amendment to capture some of that $17 million in sales tax that we generate from West St. Paul. I don't know if you want to hear any more from the county, but it is a partnership, obviously, with Dakota County, the CDA, the Community Development Agency, and takeoff of the county. And we've been working on this, quite frankly, for about 15, 20 years, and we're not there yet. And we desperately need the extension for the gateway to West St. Paul.
We want to be of help to the community and a good partner as well. Did you want to testify, Ms. Brennan from Dakota County?
Sure. Andrea Brennan, Director of Community and Economic Development for the Dakota County CDA. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the County Board approved this TIF district back in 1986, and ever since then, Dakota County and the Dakota County CDA has been working in partnership with the City of West St. Paul. The Dakota County CDA has adopted a resolution supporting this legislation, as has the City of West St. Paul. And we are on the front lines working on redevelopment opportunities on South Robert, and we'll continue to work in partnership with the city to do this if we can have this critical resource in place.
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair, I may just add
Senator
that
Metzen.
A couple of years ago, through the efforts of the Senate and the House, we were able to get a $500,000 some bonding money to look at some kind of fast transit through this region. And we look to put that into this program as we go forward. So we would connect, quite frankly, St. Paul to Coates, Minnesota, and probably catch the community college out there and the Rosemont Votech and Inver Grove College and so forth and so on. So we're working on that. We've got some federal money along with the state money to look at that transit system. So this is part of the project here.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Mayor.
Madam Chair, one other little bit of added opportunity here is that the City of West St. Paul in 2014 will be undertaking a major renovation of Robert Street to improve pedestrian and vehicle safety. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to try to negotiate that center lane. It's picked up a few nicknames over the years, but the bottom line is we don't like that. We think we can make Robert Street safer and more passable so that it can support those businesses. Really, the tumblers have all aligned here to really create something great, and we're looking forward to having you as a partner in making that happen.
Thank you so much. Members, any questions or comments about Senator Metzen's bill? Is there anyone here that would like to testify for or against Senator Metzen's Senate File 2040? Seeing none, without objection, the chair would lay over for possible inclusion, Senate File 2040.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Thank you. Senator Howe, are you ready? Senator Howe, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate File 2109, this bill modifies the definition of a redevelopment district by requiring that 50% or more of the buildings in a particular district be structurally substandard. This is a change from current law that requires more than 50% be structurally substandard and potentially bar districts with exactly 50% coverage. So it's a small but important change. If you look at the bill on 1.13, it just strikes more than and puts in 50% and adds or more. So if you had a situation, you know, this we're talking about buildings here, not per square foot. So if you had four buildings on an area and two were substandard, it would meet. You wouldn't have to have three. So with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Well, Senator Howe, this is not related to a specific district. It's related to all districts.
Correct, Madam Chair.
And Ms. Honey, I'm guessing you're here to testify in support.
I am, Senator Artman, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy Honey. I'm a lawyer at Fagry, Baker & Daniels, and I represent the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, who asked Senator Howe to carry this legislation. And what EDIM is about 500 statewide members of economic developers, EDAs, et cetera, and they came to me, I think, starting about 2 years ago and just said that there are so many instances where they're dealing with an even number of parcels in a redevelopment district, and the language then really requires them to end up with a supermajority in terms of substandard buildings. Again, it tends to be a little bit more of an outstate problem than a metro problem, but not necessarily. But again, if with more than 50%, if you have four parcels, then you need three of the four to have substandard buildings, and this would admittedly ease the requirements slightly by making it two of the four in that instance. If you have one parcel that's got a substandard building and you've got a total of two parcels, again, then you have to have both parcels. So it does ease the requirements a little bit for a redevelopment district, but we think in a pretty judicious manner, and we hope you can support it.
I don't disagree. I would think that it would be the goal was really to have it be 50%
right,
and not necessarily 50% or more. I don't see a significant difference other than in its application. Sure makes it a lot easier in those 2-4 situations. Questions or comments for Senator Howe? Is there anyone else here that would like to testify either for or against Senator Howe's provision? Seeing none, I'm going to defer to counsel here. Is this a bill that should be laid over for inclusion or separately? Senator Howe, do you have a preference as to how it should proceed?
You know, I think we could send it separately, but I don't know if we have a quorum to move it forward here.
Well, I'll do this. I'll move to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we can consult on that later and decide whether it fits or whether we want to take it up separately. But for now, I'll move that it be laid over for possible inclusion without objection.
Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Howe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Honey. And Senator Cruz. Senator Howe moves that we take Senate File 2016 off the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. We have Senate File 2016 before us. Senator Cruz, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for that recess. I think we have the start of a agreement here, some changes, some really good changes, actually, to the bill. I think ultimately we may need 24 hours just to kind of draft the legislation and finalize those changes. But if it would be okay with you, Madam Chair, I would still like to get the testimony on the table.
Absolutely, Senator Cruz. I do want to accommodate folks. So it was Mr. Arzvald. You began, but would you like to continue your testimony, sir?
Madam Chair, I guess I would maybe defer to Patricia Nauman, who can give a little more background as to the origins of the bill, and then I can follow up with any questions.
Madam Chair, Ms. Nauman. Thank you. Patricia Nauman, I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, and I just wanted to provide some brief context for the committee, a refresher on sort of where this bill came from and why and what happened to it over the last couple of years. Metro Cities and the League had originally brought this bill forth as an attempt to help cities deal with neighborhood stabilization and recovery as a result of the foreclosure crisis. So the intent of the bill was originally to allow for an expansion of the 10% pooling provision that is used for affordable housing and to expand that for use with market rate housing in areas where there are high foreclosures to provide some flexibility for communities. Senator Cruz earlier had talked about some of the technical clarifications. What happened to this bill originally 2 years ago is it was passed by the legislature, and due to a drafting error, it was not included in the final bill, and we weren't able to discern that it actually had not been included in the final tax bill until after the legislature adjourned. So we brought the bill up again last year and were advised at that time to sort of start over, and so we did that. And during the process for that bill, once we got into conference committee, we did work with Senator Limmer to address some of the concerns that he had raised, some very good concerns and changes that we made that clarified that properties had actually been entirely through the foreclosure process. So we were doing that very late in the session, pretty much at the 11th hour, trying to figure out all the definitions around foreclosures in the tax committee. And it's not surprising to me that once this bill got out into the real world that there are some corrections that need to be made to make sure that it's workable and that the definitions are consistent and that the provisions work for cities. So that's just a little bit of background context for you as to why we're here today. We do think that most of these corrections are really largely technical in nature or clarifying to make sure that the bill works. The $200,000 cap that was raised earlier, the reason that that cap is there was to when we originally brought the bill up 2 years ago, there were some concerns that we not get into the business of turning these properties into sort of McMansion style or really high market housing. So that's the reason, just so you know, for the cap in the first place. And we do think that this change is really just about clarifying when that value is actually placed on the property. So I will turn it over to the city folks. They can talk about the specifics for the community.
Ms. Berggren, did I say that correctly?
Yes, thanks.
Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm just going to give you a little more context about the foreclosure work that's going on in the city of Brooklyn Park. You have a handout with a PowerPoint presentation, and on the bottom of page 2, I think that's a very important chart to look at. It's showing that Brooklyn Park has an unusually high number of foreclosures relative to other areas. About 14% of our housing stock will have gone through foreclosure over a 5-year period. If you look at the number of single-family homes, we're closer to 20% of our single-family housing stock. And that's much higher than other communities. Brooklyn Center is in a similar situation. But this has really been a huge thing for our community. And on the top of page 3, you see our 3-part plan that Senator Cruz talked about. The third part being taking time to go out and buy, rehab, and resell some of the foreclosed homes in our community. We're going to touch about 220 foreclosed homes through this process. The chart at the bottom of page 3 shows the funding sources that we're using to do this work. Most of the funds are coming from the federal government, but we have set aside $1 million in TIF funds to do this work. I want to also just describe a little bit about how we do this work in our community. The city is not going out and buying and rehabbing these houses. We are partnering with for-profit and non-profit developers. So we have 7 developers that we're working with. Their logos are shown to you on page 4. And to date, we've touched about 100 single-family homes. So we've acquired 100 single-family homes for rehab, and 65 of those homes are now reoccupied. But as we continue to move forward, we're continuing to see foreclosures in our neighborhoods, and so we've dedicated $1 million in the TIF funds to do more work. We're going to try to do 28 homes using those dollars, and our partner with these TIF dollars is Robert Engstrom Companies, and Robert Engstrom is here today. If you have any questions for him, he's sitting over here. And as we started working with him, we're recognizing that some of these technical corrections would really make it easier for us to use these funds effectively in our community. So we'd be happy to answer any other questions you might have about the work we're doing.
Thank you, Ms. Berggren. Mr. Engstrom, would you like to testify in support of the proposal?
Well, as some of you know, I used to be in the community development business, and under today's economic conditions, I had to start doing something else, and having had some rehabilitation experience up in Cathedral Hill, doing work on foreclosed homes was a way of staying alive as such. But so we are on our 45th home or so in Brooklyn Park right now. And I guess the thing I'd like to say is that, first of all, there's a pretty professional and experienced staff that requires total rehab. So it isn't like some people that would put on a coat of paint and then sell the home to somebody and then 3 months later, the furnace goes out, and they got a $7,000 bill, and the process starts all over. So with the total rehab, you really start to stabilize the housing stock. And I can tell you, there is nothing to be gained by having a vacant house sitting around for 6 months, because when you come in and you have a house that's been there for a while, the neighbors literally put their arms around you, and they're so excited about it. So it does a lot to stabilize a whole neighborhood when you can just take one house here and one house there. So other than that, I'll answer any other questions you might have.
Well, Mr. Engstrom, thank you for your testimony. I know these neighborhoods are really struggling, and I have seen what's been happening in Brooklyn Park, and it has had a disproportionate number of foreclosures. So I appreciate all of you working so hard to address this, and we are going to do what we can to help you. Senator Limmer, did you have any questions or comments?
Well, Madam Chair, this has been an area that I've kind of had a focus on for quite a few years, but the concern that I had is sometimes cities and their desire to do the best service for their community, they get involved in areas where sometimes it's perceived that the private sector should be rather than government. And yet, despite that, during bad economic times, especially when a particular industry is hit particularly hard in the construction business, a lot of construction businesses are just plain folded up and there's no money to be made anywhere. And so the cities are kind of caught in between wanting to improve their cities and at the same time not finding contractors at the ready as they used to be. But the concern that I have is that we're not making a permanent program where cities, other cities that may be observing this type of legislation may think it's the role of their city to now go out and fix everything up that somebody in a city council thinks needs repair. And it can get out of hand. And in some cities in the metropolitan area, it has gotten out of hand. There's a particular large city in Hennepin County that has bulldozed homes flat out when Habitat for Humanity could have taken over that house, repaired it with a very modest cost, and or even a private sector for that matter, a very private rehab cost, and put a home back into use without disturbing the architectural integrity of neighborhoods. The new homes that come in, they try to make it look kind of old look, but it's not close to what is there in the current neighborhoods. Nevertheless, I think there's been times, and I've observed, especially the nonprofit sector, where there can be a home for a family of four, they get the lot for free, and they're selling the home. The price of the home is 20 to 25% higher than what the market price is, but because there's a government program, that price seems to be okay and it's justified on someone's appraisal page. And so I think there's a lot of concern for the general area. This particular bill changed some words on page 3 regarding when does a city get involved in a property. We took great caution a year or two ago to make sure that the home was fully foreclosed and the redemption period was I think even satisfied. I can't remember for sure. And there was some changes to it. And I've been told that it was to modify it in order, it seemed like our intent didn't quite hit the mark last time. And so I'll have my researchers in the judiciary review the language to make sure that we're hitting the mark. That was the true intention. And then the other concern was is this kind of a temporary bill or is this an ongoing into the future? And that type, more of a fine read on the intent of what Brooklyn Park wants to do.
Ms. Nauman?
Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, the bill, we were aware of those concerns even when we had this drafted a couple of years ago. So the bill does expire at the end of 2016. It's really meant to get at the issues regarding high levels of foreclosures, and we're all hoping that this crisis is going to be moving behind us. So the provision expires at the end, in December of 2016.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer,
I live in the next city over in Maple Grove from Brooklyn Park, And I think anyone in the real estate business, let alone anyone who lives around that region of Hennepin County, will attest to the fact that Brooklyn Park has been particularly hard hit in the percentage of homes in their community. What is it, 1 in 5 are in some type of foreclosure? This is a very massive quantity of homes. And I even have to question whether or not the private sector can satisfy all of the demand in a timely way. And we all know what vacant homes can do to a community. It doesn't bring a cohesiveness to neighborhoods. It's a place where kids can get into the property, even at the best interest of securing the property. There's maintenance issues. There's yard work. There's if you don't take care of the yards and making sure the property is well sealed, you're going to get animals in the building. You've got all sorts of issues. So there's a literal wealth of real estate there that's eroding quickly, and it can affect it. I'll take a look at this legislation, make it a personal responsibility of mine to review it before we make a final vote.
Thank you, Senator Loomer. Senator Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And like the concern I posed earlier, and I think Senator Lemon touched on it, you know, maybe there's more than the appetite, more housing stock than the private sector can handle there. But I do think it's very imperative that we try and let the private sector work, and we give them at least an opportunity. I know one of the communities I dealt with is, you know, I think we either did a 60 or a 30 day where the public had 30 days to purchase the property before the government got involved in buying it. And I think that's very important. You know, we can't always, I appreciate, is it Mr. Arnzel made the comment that, you know, these are total rehabs and that it's not that maybe a private sector might come in and just fix something to the code standards. But again, that's letting the private sector and the market forces work there. If there's a situation where you can't get somebody in the private sector and you've given them 30 days or 60 days to purchase that property, then I think the community can make that decision and government can get involved in helping it out. But I don't want to see a situation where somebody who's involved in that business or somebody who personally wants to buy a piece of property has to compete with a government entity for access to that property. That is not government's role. And we have to be very careful that we craft legislation that allows that opportunity for the market forces and private individuals to take a hold of it.
Senator Cruz, I hope you'll keep working on this legislation. I think there's room here to accomplish something and to meet your goals here as well. So with that, Senator Howe would move that we lay this bill on the table. We encourage you to keep working on it with Senator Limmer and Senator Howe and bring it back whenever you're ready to have it considered again. And all those in favor of Senator Howe's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate file 20... Let's see. Senate file 2016 is laid on the table. Members, we will meet tomorrow morning at 8:30. We have two proposals for the City of Bloomington TIF districts. We have Senator Bach's Cook Orr Hospital District and Senator Eaton's Brooklyn Park Tax Increment Financing. We may have to cancel tomorrow given some of the weather predictions, but we are planning to go forward. Check your listserv, check the Senate website to see if there's any cancellation, and the weather is actually looking favorable to having a hearing tomorrow. Looks like more rain than snow was expected, at least as of now, so we are planning to go forward tomorrow. Check again before you leave home to make sure that we're actually going to have business. We will not have a hearing on Thursday because of the budget forecast. So with that, with no business before us, we are adjourned.